One day, I stumbled upon a flock of ibis. They were doing their thing, grazing through the bins at the back of a Coles. And it dawned on me, someone had to tell their story. Why not me?
This actually doesn't make me happy. This stuff around me, these four walls. I want to break free of these walls. So that's, to be honest, when I first started sleeping in my car.
You're listening to All the Best. I'm Jess Hamilton. So this is Kevin Bacon, but not the one from the movies. Sometimes he's known as Big Kev, or KB. He's about as famous as a pig can get in Sydney. He goes for daily walks around his home in the Sydney suburb of Alexandria, and people flock to catch him when he's out and about. The grounds of Alexandria are a precinct I'm struggling to describe, but if you've been to a recently gentrified part of any major Australian city, then you'll recognise what I'm talking about. Those sustainable food precincts in a repurposed train yard or factory, a place where cafes and bars, public veggie patches, markets and produce all come together under one umbrella, and pretty quickly jack up the value of the suburb. But for a long time, despite everything else on offer at the grounds, one of the main attractions has been Kevin Bacon. The much-loved hog has become a sort of mascot for Alexandria. Kevin isn't your typical pig. For example, he's actually pretty introspective for a farm animal. In a recent blog post he authored, apparently with the help of some humans, he laid out his New Year's resolutions for 2017. Not exactly normal pig behaviour. Maybe a bit self-righteous if you ask me. I think the fame's getting to his head. But nonetheless, this pig is working his public profile. Like any celebrity, Kevin has had his fair share of scandal. A couple of years ago, Kevin Bacon the pig and his housemate Bradley the lamb went missing. CCTV footage confirmed it was theft. They were abducted from their pens overnight by three burglars, which would have been quite a feat. Big Kev is no babe in a teacup. This hog is huge. And now he was gone. The story splashed across the news and the kidnapping became a community crisis. It was reported that KB and Bradley's owners were offering huge rewards in exchange for the safe return of their star attractions, between $5,000 and $7,000, according to various news sources. The safety and well-being aside, losing KB and Bradley was also a potential threat to the business. These animals brought huge crowds to their cafe home, and losing them could ultimately mean losing customers. For 3 weeks, we heard nothing. Finally, Kevin Bacon and Bradley were found safe in Gippsland, Victoria. They were anonymously dropped off at an animal sanctuary 500 kilometres away from home. No one knows how they got there. The relief was widespread, particularly in Alexandria among locals. I know this because newspapers, serious newspapers, covered their return. But it begged the question, why did people care so much? We think it's because us humans have a bit of a thing for special animals. Black sheep, which is the theme for today's episode. Animals that stand out, surprise us, and maybe in some ways aren't exactly normal. You're listening to All the Best. I'm Jess Hamilton. Later on in the show, we see what happens when you fight midlife crisis with glitter and become a bunny. But first up, Emily Jane Smith has an incredibly unpopular opinion about a certain animal, and she wants you to get on side. This animal seems to be the exception to the rule for many unconditional animal lovers. When it comes to this native, even the most fervent pacifists seem to draw the line. We'll let Emily take it from here.
bin chickens, they get the rubbish everywhere.
Developed a little bit of a hatred of the bin chicken.
And he looks at my hand and just pecks it.
Oh, that beak just wants to gouge your eyes out. No, thank you.
They're so dirty and stuff.
I'm pretty upset about their behaviour.
The Australian white ibis is a distinctive bird. It has white feathers, a bare black head, and a signature long down-curved beak. Not many people know this, but they're actually native to Australia, and they're found all over the country. Ask pretty much anyone on the street in a big city like Sydney, they are an unpopular bird.
Drinking bin juice, like spreading like orange peels and hobo socks around.
The modern narrative of the ibis has been written by colloquial slander, such as dump chook, tip turkey, or the most popular, bin chicken. This is because in an urban setting, the ibis is commonly found hanging around rubbish bins.
An ibis that was coming along beside me actually came right up to me and had a go, proper peck at my sandwich.
Our waste is their dinner, so it's not unusual to be strolling down a city laneway to find a few ibis rummaging and sticking their beaks in some scraps before throwing it everywhere. So recently, an anti-ibis movement has picked up pace. Now it's cool to hate on the ibis, you know, it's funny to send a photo to your mate of you giving the finger to an ibis, flipping the bird to the bird, so to speak. And with meme culture as strong as ever, anti-ibis propaganda has accelerated with predictable ferocity.
Doves are birds that represent purity. Ibises wreck picnics and disrupt the community. Penguins are birds that fall in love and mate for life. But ibises love nothing because they're dead inside.
Well, that's a bit harsh. God. Now, this video's racked up 1.8 million views on Facebook in just over a month. It's from the Bondi hipsters, and they are not acting alone. Heard of Brown Cardigan? They've been sledging the ibis for years.
Yeah, the ibis, they're the worst birds.
This, what we'll call anti-ibis culture and the popularisation of derogatory labels, has painted a picture of this creature as simple bin juice-swilling monster birds, their sole purpose only to upset your comfortable urban existence. One day I stumbled upon a flock of ibis. They were doing their thing, grazing through the bins at the back of a Coles. And it dawned on me, someone had to tell their story. Why not me? I believe there's more to this much maligned native Australian bird, their true story marginalised by the hate. So I've made it my mission. I'm going to find ibis allies, see what these birds truly have to offer, so we can mend their public image.
Okay, so let's go back to the 1970s. Sydney region, you're interested in watching birds. You see an Australian white ibis. You go home, you pick up the telephone, and you ring up everyone you know who likes birds, and you say, come down, there's this bloody awesome bird, we've got to go look at it. Because they weren't common. You didn't see them regularly in the Sydney region back in the 1970s and before that.
That's Dr. John Martin, a wildlife ecologist at the Royal Botanic Gardens in Sydney, and an Australian white ibis expert. According to him, the ibis's original habitat has been degraded. Wetlands are less wet because of competition with dam construction and other human interferences. Food has been scarce, and so the ibis population has shifted to the coast, where we live.
Whereas once upon a time, there would have been tens of birds, or even zero, of this species. So it's all to do with human changes of the landscape.
And well, gone are the days where we would excitedly call a friend after spotting an ibis. Now, Dr. Martin says there are about 10,000 ibises in Sydney, and they're thriving.
And the reason why they're successful in the urban environment is because we provide lots of food for them. And we see most of these birds are actually at landfills because they're eating our rubbish.
So this is why the white ibis can be commonly found hanging around garbage bins and looking for scraps. Although this has been caused by humans, as the ibis population grows, so does the disdain for this native species. Dr. John Martin is an ally, but to be fair, it's his job. And I just knew there had to be common people like me, rooting for the trash turkey.
Ibis, the bird, what are your plans to rid Sydney of this pest?
I just say something? I think they get a hard time.
Oh.
And honestly, And I'm just sick of people picking on the ibis, really. Like, seriously.
This true believer is Gladys Berejiklian, the newly appointed New South Wales State Premier. I just couldn't believe it. First week in office and she was making the case for the ibis. So I tried giving her a call. I wanted her endorsement for a more public appreciation of the ibis, maybe better funded education about the species, and even a bit of encouragement for the cause I felt like I was undertaking alone. This is the hold music for the Premier's department. Her spokesperson actually said it was the weirdest call she'd received all day. Gladys didn't want to chat. So I hit the internet. You know, it's where anti-ibis memes and vitriol has taken up residence. And by the laws of the internet, maybe, you know, just maybe, I can find an online community defending this bird. After many hours of research, I found a pro-ibis event on Facebook. It seemed to be a vigil, put on by a group called Ibis Appreciation and Recognition. 200 people attending, commemorating the tragic strangulation of an ibis in Brisbane. Seriously, this happened. A man was arrested. Look it up. The vigil was to be held on the steps of the Sydney Opera House on a Friday evening. Surely here I would be able to find more ibis sympathisers. You know, people who could help me share their story.
So I'm at the Opera House and I can't see any obvious ibis supporters, so I'm just going to double check the Facebook event and see if there are any specific instructions as to where we're supposed to gather. It just says Sydney Opera House. And complimentary hot chips and complimentary bin juice. R.I.P.
Hi guys. I'm just wondering, are you guys here for the ibis?
No. What is it? Sorry, because we are from Brazil, we don't know.
Oh, okay. It's like a bird.
Ibis.
Yeah. Likes to hang around.
Yeah.
You know. So are you here for the ibis today?
No.
So no luck, it just seems to be a bunch of tourists here, but yeah.
I was discouraged. Were Dr. John and I the only people in Australia dedicated to the plight of the ibis brethren? So I sent a message to the organisers of the vigil event. They replied immediately, explaining that the event was largely symbolic. Well, it was a bit of a joke. And to be honest, they were a little surprised I attended. The founders are high school students and passionate meme creators.
G'day, Doug here, one of the founders of Ibis Appreciation and Recognition. It's an honour to be here today. I've been a lover of ibises from the day of birth, so it's a pleasure.
I was joined by his mates, Lando and Luke, and through layers of irony, I tried to uncover where they stood in this ibis debate.
Summarise what your favourite thing is about the ibis.
I think that's the cornerstone of the ibis's existence, is that the fact that it's so unique. And a lot of people see that uniqueness and they're threatened by it.
It's beautiful. For me, I think before you see the ibis, you hear it. I mean, it makes its presence known. I mean, you sit in the classroom and you're working through some PDHP and then all of a sudden you hear this
haw, 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 haw,
coming from outside and you think, wow.
Haw, 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 haw.
Lando explained that there was a rivalry between the meme pages, that pro-ibis content was facing a David and Goliath battle against anti-ibis pages and memes.
There's a page called Brown Cardigan and Ibis Out of Redfern Now, and their haters, Brown Cardigan's always posting ibis hating memes.
And although their love for the ibis may be a little hyperbolic, I'm glad they created a space for pro-ibis discourse.
It's all about just blocking out the hate at the same time. Like, you can only cop so much. You just get to the point where you're just like, alright, enough's enough. We're just going to keep doing what we're doing, keep posting memes, keep loving the ibis, and just let these guys do what they want to do, you know?
Through all of these layers of meme culture and irony, I just didn't know who to trust, who's on what side, or where to go from here. So I decided to go back to the beginning. I went for a walk with Dr. John Martin, wildlife ecologist and ibis expert.
So right now we're sitting in the Royal Botanic Garden, Sydney. We're on Sydney Harbour, so we've got the water lapping in the background there. And there are a few ibis around. I wouldn't call it a sanctuary for them, but they most certainly are a few here, and there is nesting here in the garden.
I asked him how he felt about all this ibis hate, and he had a more optimistic outlook towards a less flattering ibis discourse.
There's that old saying, I guess, all publicity is good publicity. So, you know, if people are talking about the topic, then there's the opportunity for people to be learning more about the topic. So if we weren't talking right now, then this idea that there's a conservation issue associated with the Australian wild ibis wouldn't be something that people would hear about. Been chicken all the way.
In a world wrought with ibis hate, finding love for this native bird has been arduous. Our daily interactions are bin rummaging and even occasional sandwich stealing. So I get it. What's to like? But I encourage you to withdraw your judgment and question your hatred. Think not of what the ibis has done to you, but of what we have done to the ibis. Like Dr. Martin says, you've got to take the good with the bad. And I don't want to get all David Attenborough on you, but ultimately we should be proud of the ibis. Celebrate their story, because theirs is a tale of modern-day adaptation, determination and survival.
Yeah, most definitely. So the Australian wild ibis is a success story. We should be flying the flag, you know, proud of our species that's, you know, conquering the urban environment. And yeah, it's messy, it can be smelly, and it's not desirable. But they're actually adapting to the environment that we've provided for them, and they're succeeding. Birds, mammals, fish, not to mention plants, insects, reptiles, amphibians. None of them have come and conquered the city.
So next time you spot these creatures, think not of their immediate behaviour, but ponder their history. We messed up their environment. The least we can do is let them drink bin juice with dignity.
That story was by Emily Jane Smith, with help from supervising producer Selena Shannon. If for some reason you want to help preserve the ibis, there are surveys you can do and apps you can download to help track the behaviour and numbers of these much maligned birds. Head to the New South Wales Office of Environment and Heritage website to find out more. You're listening to All the Best, and this week we've got stories about black sheep, those animals that stand out and catch our attention. For our next story, I'm going to do something a little different to what we usually do on All the Best. I've got Bonnie Tai, the contributor who made this next piece, in the studio with me to give you a bit of an introduction.
What I've got here right now is this viral video that I found. So I thought maybe we could quickly play it and that way you can get some understanding as to who this person is. So I guess what we are seeing here is a very, very busy street in, well, I know it's Brighton, but you can't really tell where it is. But we've got this fellow, he's dressed in tight, bright yellow, what would you even call that?
Spandex?
Spandex? Like it's like a one-piece kind of bright yellow spandex. He's got his hair and pigtails, flowers in his hair, and he's just boogieing away. He looks like he's got absolutely no care in the world. The awesome thing about it is this old woman, I don't know, maybe she looks like she's 90, hunched over.
You can't even see her face, she's so hunched over.
She's started boogieing with him. She's just dancing away and everyone's joining in, and I hope I'm that awesome when I'm that old.
And she's left her walking frame behind her to have a good boogie.
You know, it's light out, like no one's drunk. This is just a lovely moment that's happened.
This is amazing. It looks like the middle of the day.
It does.
So who is this guy?
Well, he calls himself the Disco Bunny. And, you know, one day he woke up and he decided he just wasn't happy with having, you know, a 9-to-5 job and everything like that. So he quit everything to spread love and joy in spandex.
In gold spandex.
In gold spandex. But I've seen him in pink spandex. I think that's his fave.
That outfit is a big barrier. So, you know, you put on the outfit. Whoa! I notice my energy has changed. I put on some glitter. My energy's changed again, you know. I leave that front door. Whoa, my energy's changed. Because within the first 3 minutes of leaving the front door, wherever I am, someone says, wow, you look amazing. And I see them smile when they look at me. And that gives me the energy and a little bit more self-belief and courage that, you know what, it's okay to be different. And I think, Bonnie, that's what that big viral video taught me, is it's okay to be different. Well, my name is Pablo Woodward. That's one of my names. I'm better known as the Disco Bunny. The transition started was I was living in a house in Leeds, in the north of England, and it was a house, and you know, I had bills, I had a bedroom, I had a guest room, whatever, I had a lounge room, I had all that stuff, and I was living in this house, and it was a massive house, and it was my house, my home. But I'm nomadic. This is who I am, you know. I don't come from England. I have a British accent because I was adopted. But I was adopted to Luxembourg first. And it's only from the age of 10 that I lived in England. I lived in Australia for almost 10 years. You know, I speak French and Spanish. Goodness. So where do I come from? Nowhere. So part of the journey, which I guess is the first stage of the Disco Bunny, which we're talking about today, was I woke up in my house, which was my castle, and I was a prisoner of my castle, a prisoner of society. And I said, this actually doesn't make me happy, this stuff around me, these four walls. I want to break free of these walls. So that's, to be honest, when I first started sleeping in my car. Since May 2015, I have not lived anywhere. I think it was a mix between inspiration and desperation. A realization that I needed to grasp my life, take control of it, stop constantly thinking about the past and focusing on the future and living in the now. So I decided to take the focus off myself and onto people on the street who I would normally meet by making them smile. The origin of the Disco Bunny is certainly a bloke called Pablo Sousa Santos, who was me before I was adopted, when I was adopted at 7 years old from an orphanage in Brazil. So sort of the Disco Bunny was really about going back to my roots. In Brazil, I led a simple life in the orphanage, sort of limited food, no possessions. Yeah, I played on the streets. The streets were my playground. And that's where I made my friends, and that's where I learned about life. So it's basically, I started that journey and living in my car from living in a house to having basically I just imploded, exploded everything around me. And my hair became unkempt. I was waking up going, what am I doing? Where do I go? I didn't know what to do. I didn't have the vision of the Disco Bunny. I just knew that I didn't want what I had. So I basically started wandering like a vagabond. And it was during that time, one evening, on a night out, watching some live music, that I bumped into this woman called Sue Seven. And I'm going to say she rescued me. Yes. There was a funny photo she took of me. And my hair is all over the place. I'm sort of unshaved. I got bags under my eyes. She took me in under her wing. She fed me. She fed me. I'd had a diet of biscuits every day. and I, you know, I have a biscuit belly, which I joke about. When I'm poor, I eat biscuits. And so she took me under her wing. She fed me. She gave me love. And I regenerated, re-energized. Anyway, she put my hair in bunches for the first time. And I thought, I'm a man. You know, men don't wear bunches. And I had a shirt and I had a tie and I was ever so smart. And the reaction I got was positive. People liked it. So the first Disco Bunny look was bunches, a tie, a shirt. Then one day I went to some festival and I wore a little bit of Lycra. I wore some leggings and, you know, relatively sort of tight top. And then from that, I pushed myself out of my comfort zone further by wearing unitards, leotards, onesuits. There's no hiding when you're wearing them. The wardrobe has one purpose only, and that is to make the person on the other side who looks at me wearing those silly outfits to smile. And the other purpose of the wardrobe for me is to put me out of my comfort zone. I dare myself to wear these outfits. There have been many incidences, Bonnie, where I've really wanted to bring the Disco Bunny out, but I don't. I just can't muster it. The chains around my life are the chains I put upon myself. That's the whole point. You know, before Christmas this year in Australia, I've struggled a lot financially. In Australia, it's very... What I do is alternative. What I do is weird. I'm not out there to make money. If somebody gives me money, great. The cost of living in Australia is ridiculous. Last time I was here, 4 years ago, I was only $40 an hour or something like that as an English teacher. Yes, working for great company. On the streets of the Disco Bunny, I'm earning something like $11 an hour on average. You put rent into that, and the fact is I'm working, my work is so physical, certainly on the streets anyway, that, you know, I can only do 4 hours. When I first arrived in Australia, I arrived with $60. And I slept on the bridge the first night. I've been homeless many times in my life, many times. I identify with the homeless community a lot because I've been there, and I understand the struggles that they have. Last year, 2016, was the second hardest year in terms of mental, emotional struggle in my whole life. I did choose a difficult path. I wanted to grow. I could have done the festival circuit and stayed in one place and what have you. But I didn't want to do that. I wanted to learn. I wanted to explore, put myself out of my comfort zone. So every year was, every day was a real genuine struggle. And financially, a ridiculous struggle. This year I refocused. I mean, my mission statement is to unite people, irrespective of gender, race, religion, orientation, physical or mental ability. That's my simple mission. I want to do one lap of the world. It might take me a year and a half. Or a year, but I would like to spread love, positive energy, unity in as many places as I can, as long as I have the energy and the will. The vision that I have is to start a movement whereby people open their eyes and look at each other and smile at each other and try and learn from each other and utilize their energy to and skills to better someone else's life. Here in Australia, I got invited to a end-of-year party for women who've been suffering from domestic abuse. Many of them were on refugee status. I was the only man there. And I went along and they all looked at me distrustingly to begin with, which I completely understood. But after the 2 hours, the women were standing up and they were dancing. Their children had glitter on them. Some of them had glitter on them themselves. They were having dance-offs with each other. We had people from all over the world, the different ethnicities. And it was for me, it was enriching. So I want the Disco Bunny to evolve. And for the Disco Bunny to evolve, I need people to be part of my adventure.
That story was by Bonnie Tai, with editing by Selena Shannon. Pablo left Australia for a new adventure a couple of weeks ago. If you didn't catch him on the street while he was here on his humanitarian mission to unite people in universal love, and that's a direct quote, you can follow his journey on Instagram. His handle is DiscoBunny11. There's also ways you can support him if you're interested in helping out. Go to thediscobunny.com. That's it for the show this week, but one last thing. For the past few weeks, we've been working on something that we're really excited to share with you. If you like what you hear on All the Best, and you'll be in Sydney on the 9th of March, we're throwing a live listening and storytelling night. Come and join us in our Midnight Garden Theatre at 107 Projects in Redfern, where we'll be celebrating our new look and sound with an awesome lineup of contributors from Sydney and Melbourne sharing their nocturnal stories. Tickets are only $12 and you can buy them through trybooking.com. We'll be posting all the details on our website, allthebestradio.com, and on our Facebook page. So if you haven't already, give us a like and get all the details. All the Best is made at FBI Radio in Sydney in association with SYN and 3RRR in Melbourne. Our executive producer is Selena Shannon. Our Victorian State Coordinator is Bethany Atkinson-Quinton. Our community coordinator is Chloe Gillespie. Tegan Nichols compiles our show. Beth Gibson is our SYN production manager. And I'm Jess Hamilton. All the Best is heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network and is made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter and also find our archives at allthebestradio.com. While you're there, subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.